This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
About a standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network. And with me is Mike from Commentary Track Stars.
Hello.
And welcome back to Dave Rossi, the visual effects producer for Star Trek Remastered.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for joining us again. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Let's get into some Spock.
Yeah. Like Dave just said, we're going to get into our second character episode, where we'll talk about the second in command. The first officer, which I've never understood, second in command, first officer. Number one, Spock. See, I can't be dramatic with Spock like I was with Kirk, you know, making up middle names for Shatner and stuff. It's just Spock.
Spock, yeah.
Jim Spock. So Spock is, he is the cornerstone. If Kirk is like the head, Spock is the cornerstone. He is the logic base of not only the original series, but I would say the franchise. And so we're gonna talk about Spock and how awesome he is.
Dave, what are your thoughts on Spock?
He's kind of a hack. No.
I don't like Spock.
No, I think that the character of Mr. Spock is one of the most epic characters in science fiction that's ever been created. And I think it is in no small part due to Nimoy's portrayal of him. The thing that, you know, as a kid watching the show, I remember the pointed ears. I remember that he was stronger than everybody else. He had green blood, all those things that are kind of cool, you know, to a 7-year-old. But what's really cool to me about Spock is this eternal personal struggle that he has. I mean, imagine that you had a portion of your personality that was constantly clawing at you to get out. Constantly, even subconsciously, the way you react to things, the way you emote, you know, constantly there trying to get out. And this guy, more than any other Vulcan, going through the ritual of trying to, you know, we know the story of, okay, that the Vulcans were a very violent race, and in order to stop themselves from killing themselves off, they adopted this thing of logic, and much more than that, they devoted themselves to a lifelong study of how to control their emotions, and really that means repress in their situation, because their emotions are so strong. So they all are these kind of stoic, logical people who have achieved this level of mastery over their emotions. That's cool enough to begin with. But now you add in the wild card for this one character, that one of the most emotional races in the universe, human beings, is half of what he is. So his training, you know, he goes overboard because he wants to be a Vulcan. I'm a Vulcan. He kind of, through the whole front run of the show until the movies, he is just working so hard to suppress that side of him. And that is the coolest struggle to watch on the show. And you know, look, we can look back and say, well, look at him in Where No Man Has Gone Before. He's smiling, he's yelling, he's, you know, and in the original pilot, The Cage. But they didn't know who he was. you got to cut that side of him a little slack. I mean, they didn't really know what the character was. It kind of evolved, and what he brings to it is just amazing in my point of view.
Yeah, I think that having Spock being half human instead of just, we've got an alien, look, an alien, and, you know, he doesn't have, you know, antenna or anything like that. It's like, look, he's an alien, but he's half human. I think is one of those things that I imagine maybe it was just something they just threw in there. But from the very beginning, from Corbomite Maneuver, the first episode that they actually filmed for series, it's there. That struggle is there. And it's one of the few things, continuity-wise, that is there all the time. And it's really neat to have that from this show that could have just been, you know, I'm the googly-eyed alien, like Robbie wrote the robot. I'm the weird guy who just, you know, states the obvious.
Right.
Yeah, it's actually kind of similar. I mean, when you were describing it, I was looking, and behind you I can see a picture of Superman. It is kind of like Superman, where this guy is torn between two worlds and kind of the opposite of that. But it is really interesting to sort of do that, especially when you only have one. You would think that, you know, there would be like a Vulcan on the first show, and then maybe to change it up in Next Generation, they'd have one who's half human, half Vulcan. But the sort of, I guess, foresight to do that right off the bat was pretty brilliant. And I also totally agree that Nimoy's performance has a whole lot to do with the character being what it is. I think Nimoy is a really smart guy, you know, and he was so protective of that character. And I think he thought so much about it that, you know, that really he ensured that character would be as good as it could possibly be.
Yeah, it's interesting. And there are just seminal moments in that series. You know, a couple of them might be a little bit of scenery eating, but, you know, in the naked time where he gets the disease and he's in the briefing room and he's kind of rifling through his training as a Vulcan. He's trying to be logical. He's trying to think of things like mathematics. He's trying to, you know, anything to not let, he's just trying so hard to not let this part of him come out. And when it comes out, it's so earnest. You know, when he's talking to Kirk about it, it's so earnest. He's just a guy who's like, you're a friend of mine and I can never tell you that. You know, it's just like this very exposed, raw moment for this character. And even, you know, they're in the middle of this emergency and Kirk is trying to snap him out of it because he needs his help to come up with this crazy formula. But beyond that, I like to think that Kirk is also, he knows how important it is to Spock to be in control of that side of him. And so he's trying to get him back. He's trying to be like, hang on, buddy, I'm going to help you here. It's going to hurt for a minute. You know, he's just anything he can do to help him. And it just kind of speaks to their friendship. And, you know, that moment and another moment that I think goes by a lot that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, but to me it's one of my favorite moments of the entire series, is in the episode with Reyna the android, Methuselah, and he creates all those android women and he's trying to get them to come to life, and he uses Kirk to try and spark their emotions alive or whatever he was doing. But at the end of the episode, Kirk is, you know, he's fallen in love with this woman who turns out not to be a woman, and then it turns out through his behavior, he's killed her. He and Flint have killed her because they overwhelmed her with this her newfound emotions. And that's something Spock can kind of identify with on the one side, but there's a moment where Kirk says, I just wish I could forget, and he puts his head down. And McCoy comes in, and he says, oh, you know, thank God he's finally sleeping. And he says, you know, Spock, I feel more sorry for you than I do for him. And it's because, McCoy has this great little speech where he says, you know, you'll never know the things love can drive a man to, the glorious victories, the glorious failures, the broken rules, the, you know, all that, because you're just written that, you know, you have a different set of rules. And he says, well, good night. And he walks out. And Spock is looking down at Kirk, and he puts his hand on Kirk's head, and he just says, forget. And it's a really touching moment where he knows his friend is in such pain, and to take this technique that the Vulcans have that's very private and personal to them, something they don't just willy-nilly use, and he decides he is going to pluck an entire portion of a memory from a guy's head just to help him, because Spock does understand it. He does understand those things. He just cannot expose that he does. He just can't, you know what I mean? It's a really poignant moment of his conflict, I think. It's really cool. A really touching, cool moment.
Well, how do you guys feel in the original series, the nature of the series, like we were talking about on the Kirk episode, there isn't much room for growth from episode to episode. But once they went into the feature films, there was a lot of room for growth. And, you know, even the first movie pretty much starts with Spock taking or trying to take a huge step in his personal journey. How do you guys feel that the character was dealt with in the feature films?
Spock is definitely the focal point of the whole six-episode arc, the six-movie arc, because we've got him going through Kolinar, trying to finally... he's made the decision that he's going to purge the human side. He's going to keep it down forever. And then by the end, through V'ger and learning humanity from V'ger, he decides not to do that. And then in the second one, it's about past sins or mistakes and paying for it with his life. And then the third one, he's in the title.
Right.
It's obviously the focal point. The fourth one, maybe not so much. He does get to mind meld some whales. The fifth one's all about his, half brother, supposedly, on a search for God. So it's definitely a Vulcan centric thing. And then the sixth one is about moving on. It's about everybody suppressing their emotions on things and making peace with the Klingons. And Spock is a big proponent of that. And it moves on to him in Next Generation, in Unification. He's trying to unify the Romulans and the Vulcans. Spock is just always there. He's always, if he's not in focus, he's responsible for whatever the focus is.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's interesting that in the original series, through the run of the three seasons, we know very little about any of those characters. You don't learn... What do you know about Kirk? You know that he was he has a brother. You know that a tiny bit about what he was like at the Academy. But really, you don't know anything about these people. Spock is the only one who they kind of made a conscious choice to explore and to fill out a little more. As they go on throughout the series, it's kind of interesting that the tact that they take is his whole life he's been suppressing this side. And at some point, he kind of logically comes to the conclusion, you know what? It's part of me. You know, I should embrace it. And he does it in Nimoy's portrayal again, he does it in such a kind of natural way where you still get Spock, but he's a little softer around the edges. He's a little more willing to make a joke. He's a little more willing to let the little facets of emotion kind of peek through. And it really rounds him out as a character. I mean, his arc from beginning to end is really fascinating. Well, forgive the pun. but really well done.
Yeah, I mean, like him in Star Trek VI, his conversations with Valeris and everything are really, really cool to me. I mean, what's the line? Logic is the beginning of wisdom, not the end, I don't think he would ever say that in the original series, but
exactly.
He has, grown to this point, and he's sort of willing to, like you're saying, embrace, the human side, and that makes him a much richer and, in a sense, probably more logical character than, the one that was trying to be super logical back in the day.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was exacerbated by his death, by his resurrection, maybe.
Yeah, that's a weird thing, and it bothers the hell out of me, you know, because it feels like this piece that just doesn't fit. I don't know. Am I wrong?
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, you've got a character who's progressing through the shows and then the first two movies, and then he dies and he comes back. And then in the fourth movie, he's sort of retraining himself. And it's almost like he's not quite there. You know, I mean, he's not quite there. He's not Spock as we know him. And then all of a sudden, over the course of like Star Trek 5 and 6, he's back. Yeah, he's back to almost like nothing happened, you know. And maybe that's not true. Maybe it is his death, and rebirth, which, you know, got him to the point that he's at in 6. But I kind of want to think it's not.
Maybe it's something to do with, because he had his memories of, you need to not, you know, do Kolinar. You need to not suppress the emotions so much, but learn to find the balance between them. Maybe in his retraining, he's allowing himself more emotion, and maybe that's what makes him who he is in 6.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think him dying was more a contractual
what
reality rather than a creative choice.
That's not logical.
And so in Star Trek 3, I mean, Star Trek 3 is a fun movie. The Spock getting older and, you know, I don't know, that the whole Genesis thing seemed a little weird, to didn't quite work for me. But okay, so he's back, and then they go back and they put his, you know, I mean, one of the greatest parts of that movie is when he turns to Kirk and recognizes him, you know, where you realize he's kind of Spock back on the trail. And and then Star Trek 4, Star Trek 4 is a capsulated movie in a lot of ways. It has wide audience appeal. It's not a Star Trek movie per se. I mean, there are the trappings of Star Trek, but it's not really or maybe it is in the purest of ways, you know, crazy story about we've got to get the whales, and it speaks to, you know, how we treat our world and, you know, all of that. But for the character of Spock, it's fun to see him being goofy and fish out of water, you know, in a traffic jam. You know, I mean, it's on the bus, you know, just like knocking off the crazy punk rocker guy. And so to me, that movie's kind of encapsulated. I never really look at it as, for some reason, as part of his growth, death, regrowth. It's just kind of a weird stutter, because by 5, he's back. You know, he's Spock again that you're used to from Star Trek 2. So it's almost like 3 and 4 are just kind of these weird stutter steps in between for that character. And I think it's because he just wanted out of the series and then he wanted back in.
So what do you think about the fact that they brought him back? Are you glad? Are you not glad? Do you think it was a bad idea or what?
I don't know. More Spock, the better. Wait, when you say bring him back, what do you mean in after Star Trek 2?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the character. He's. I don't think you have a full Kirk without a Spock and McCoy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Kirk is my meat and potatoes, and Spock is the potatoes, and McCoy's the meat. I mean, it's you don't have a Kirk without those two guys.
Damn. Well, here's something which I just found out in talking to Mark Cushman about his books, you know, These Are the Voyages. I never knew this. This blew my mind. But apparently there was like a contractual dispute going on between Nimoy and the studio in between seasons 1 and 2. And it came very close to there being no Spock in season 2 of that series.
Wow.
And then also, I guess one of their thoughts was to bring on David Carradine as a Vulcan, as the replacement Vulcan, which blew my freaking mind. But regardless,
Vulcan,
okay. So, how do you think the show and the franchise on the whole would be different if that had happened? If we only had one season of Spock, would we still be talking about Star Trek today?
Well, that's an interesting. Thing to think about. Look at the Doctor Who franchise. Every few years, they change the title character of that series. And it's kind of thrived and resurged, and it's super popular right now. So I don't know. I don't know what, you know, it's the butterfly flapping its wings effect. What would that change if, how would that have changed everything? I don't know. It's an interesting story to kind of ponder. Would you guys be cool with a David Carradine Vulcan on board?
By all accounts, I think that they would have just done a find and replace on the scripts that they already had written, you know, changed a couple things there, and now it's Zahn or whoever, whatever they would name that character. And I think that we would be, I think we now looking at it would be, okay, that first season we had that Leonard Nimoy guy, but then something happened, and now we've got David Carradine, and he's in all the movies. And
yeah, it's hard to think about it because we know Nimoy so well.
Mm-hmm. But I think we're so far removed from the time frame. I think at the time, we all would have been upset if we were as big of fans as we are now. But coming into it, at least for Mike and I, coming into it so far removed from it, I think that we would have eventually been okay with it. And I think as long as they had kept the quality of the writing up, there would still be Star Trek.
I mean, I could totally see being okay with it, but I'm just wondering if, like, I mean, I don't see it as being as big of a deal if, let's say, you know, Star Trek Phase 2 had come about and there was no Spock, or they continued the movies without Nimoy after, you know, Star Trek 2. Like, I think that it could survive that, but the, like, losing Spock so early on in that show's development, I'm just wondering if it would have still had the impact that it has had. I mean, we'd have no Amok time, right?
I think it would really depend on the performance of the new Spock and the writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, yeah. It's hard to tell what we would have gotten in its place. But like you were saying, I wonder what it would do to Kirk. I mean, I guess they would have tried to make him the replacement Spock, but that relationship would be gone. Of course, they probably would have never mentioned that. But I don't know. It's weird.
It may have been, oh, look, it's my old friend so-and-so. We went to the academy together, and they, you know, have this backstory.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking, I just mentioned Amok Time. I'd have to say that's my favorite Spock episode. Do you guys have a favorite? Is there one where he really stands out as a character? Not just like a single moment, but like an episode on the whole where you're like, if you were to say like, if someone didn't know who Spock was and you're like, you want to know Spock? Here's Spock. What would you show him?
Oh, I think Amok Time is probably.
Yeah.
I would say Amok Time or Journey to Babel is probably the two choices I would give.
Yeah. And I think Journey to Babel is more of a, because it's a sane Spock the whole time, I think it gives more of a well-rounded view of logic and how it can affect somebody, as opposed to the lack of logic.
And who he is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the discussion he has with his mother about growing up and, you know, and Spock's reticence to help his father because he's trying to explain to her, how can you have lived on Vulcan, married a Vulcan, raised a son on Vulcan without understanding what it means to be a Vulcan? I don't want to know what it means, if, you know, and then he goes into his whole thing. It means to adopt a philosophy, a way of life. I mean, it tells you everything you need to know about what it is to be Vulcan in a very encapsulated way.
Well, he's one of the few characters who has kind of outlived, both literally and figuratively, I guess, the original series, and has, you know, made his way into other parts of the franchise. You know, in a lot of the ways he's become like the face of the franchise, which is interesting seeing as how, you know, the network didn't even want him there in the first place. You know, he was in Next Generation in Unification. What do you guys think about that episode and just the idea of Spock showing up in the 24th century?
I think it's good to have, unlike McCoy and Scotty, who are kind of like shoehorned in there, like, look, McCoy's really old, or look, Scotty's, you know, here as a result of a transporter thing. Spock, we've known Vulcans are long-lived. It's almost like they set this up from the very beginning. That, you know, maybe someday we'll go back and we'll make a sequel show and Spock can be in it. And having him still be, you know, not just like, oh, I'm an old guy. He's actually doing things. Like, he's been, it's like a they imply he's been doing things behind the scenes for the last 80 years. And it's neat that he's still active. And it's not just like, there's old Ambassador Spock. Hi, old Ambassador Spock. And they wave as they fly by. That he's an integral part of the plot, even from that point on. That, you know, the unification of Vulcan and Romulus is something that they talk about all the way to the books now. And it's all due to this one character that we already knew and loved. And that's convenient.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first season working on Next Gen. And as a PA, I got to, you know, bring Leonard Nimoy his lunch.
Ooh, that's awesome.
It was plum meat soup.
Did he throw it against the wall?
He did. He was angry. He was angry at me. I had too much eek and not enough plum. I think, you know, that I have a different feeling about it being there. Gene had just passed away, and so having, for being a fan, having Spock appear on the show was very comforting for some reason. It was a very nice feeling to have him around the sets, and even the a lot of the crew were not Star Trek fans. I mean, they, in a lot of ways, they hired people who weren't Star Trek fans purposely because they would all be like me, you know, skulking around and sitting in the captain's chair when no one was looking. There was a lot of reverence towards him when he was there, and just seeing him in makeup and watching him deliver the scenes. I mean, it was really very powerful. It was really cool. And yeah, it does seem like it was kind of preordained that he would, if there was a new Star Trek series, he would be on it just because of the long-lived Vulcan thing. And it seems so seamless. It seems so, you know, right that he would be doing something like that. He would be working towards something. So it's very cool.
And the way that they were kind of able to tie it into Star Trek VI, which of course I'm assuming is why he was on there in the first place and everything. That was really cool too. It's, I mean, I don't know how I feel about that particular episode on the whole. I don't think it works as well as it could, but I do like what they did for the character there. You know, the way that they sort of, again, you know, took him a step further and gave him something different to do, like a new adventure, you know, and that's really cool. You know, and also I like the idea that they make Spock as important to the Star Trek universe as he is to, you know, the Star Trek franchise. You know, he's important in universe as he is out of universe. I think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can argue that every ship was having adventures like the Enterprise, and it's only occasionally do you get, you know, like, oh, you know, Jim Kirk, he was awesome. But to have Spock, you know, be as important as we imagined that he is really good for just justifying your love of the original series, I guess.
And there's a great moment in Amok Time where Kirk says to him, "You've been called the best first officer in the fleet," and it's like interesting to think that there are officers in Starfleet way up there going, "Don't you dare let that guy go." Yeah. Don't let the Vulcan go, dude. That's a good guy to keep on your staff.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And then, you know, I do like the fact that they made him, you know, captain of the Enterprise in the movies. You know, that's a kind of cool thing too.
Yeah, it's something that you forget because, you know, immediately Kirk gets demoted and takes over the Enterprise, but he was captain of the Enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. And then, of course, you know, after Next Generation, he was brought into the, he was the link between the Prime universe and the new JJ verse, which I personally, you know, think is really cool. And, I thought it was very well done. I know that can be debated, but whatever, you know.
It's not an argument for here.
if nothing else, it is kind of comforting to see, you know, Nimoy back in place there. And sure. One One other thing about that, just kind of going back to how he's grown and how he's presented in Star Trek VI, I think, you know, you kind of see that in these new movies too. And even though it's only little glimpses, it is kind of you know, nice to see a few more scenes with fully developed Spock, if you want to call him that, you know, that we do see in Star Trek VI.
And he is trying to save Romulus, so it's still a sequel to Unification, even.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, they bring that in too and everything. Yeah, I think that's cool.
I think in the new feature films, they've kind of taken a shortcut with the character in that where while the actor is portraying him as this, you know, kind of cold stoic Vulcan, he's, you know, dipping his feet in the emotion pool quite a bit. So they've kind of taken that struggle out, and, you know, they don't have a week to week chance to let that character grow that way. So, you know, there are obviously choices you have to make thematically in a feature film that you can't do in a TV series. So they've kind of jacked that forward for him. He's a little closer, I think, to old Spock than he is to young Spock from the series. I think he still kind of walks that line of being more Vulcan, but he's a lot more willing to accept his human side.
Yeah, I look at Quinto Spock as, like, Nimoy Spock is half Vulcan, half human. And I look at Quinto Spock as half human, half Vulcan, that he's more accepting of his human emotions. That would be neat if it was very restrained until he meets old Spock. Like, it'd be neat if he learned that from a Spock who'd already been through all of that. But they just choose to do that right from the beginning, which is also okay. It gives us a different view, a kind of a what-if view of the character.
They've taken a little more, they've certainly injected a lot more humor into it, and as far as, you know, like, I think there's a scene in the first movie where the Vulcan Council is kind of berating him for his deficiency or whatever they call it, where his, you know, his human half is this kind of ugly little mark that he's had to overcome. And I think it's the first time we've ever seen a Vulcan, you know, give the sign and say, live long and prosper. And in parentheses, it means fuck you, old man, you know, yeah, as he walks out. So that, you know, that's something I don't think our universe Spock would ever do. Where in this universe, he's a lot more, prone to be a lot more volatile in a controlled way.
Yeah. And I think that that's kind of necessary, you know, when you're making movies and you don't have, like you're saying, a weekly show in which to develop the character, you need to have that accelerated growth. You know, every step needs to be a big one. And, you know, I know a lot of people have problems with that. I personally don't have any problem with that, but whatever.
Well, I just think if you look at them as two, they are two separate, you know, it's like the mirror universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it really is like another, like the mirror
universe. Yeah, you accept the rules of that universe because that's the way that universe is portrayed for you. You just have to either accept it the same way or not. It's up to you, but, you know, that's the way to do it. And there's a lot of hatred, there's a lot of negativity towards what those guys are doing because they've obviously decided to make it a much more kind of action-packed, epic scope kind of thing. And that's how they want to do Star Trek. So it's not like there's not room for other interpretations. But now, whether you like them as feature films is another thing. You know, whether you agree whether or not you think they're good movies is another thing entirely. But the creating of the different universe, and that's just the tack they took, and it's just like, you know, remastered versus original series. They're both there. Mm-hmm. You exactly. Go back and forth as you choose. So there's no reason to hate on it, you know, simply because they've done that.
Right. Don't need to hate on its existence just because it's there. Yeah.
Right.
I have to say that old Spock to me is the weak point, especially of the second movie. I mean, I know it was a surprise cameo, but I was thankfully hadn't heard of it. I heard that it was happening, so I'm watching the movie like, he's calling New Vulcan. What's he doing that for? No, please no. no, don't do this. Because I made this exact joke before the movie came out. Like, what if they put new Spock in? It's like, what are they going to do? Call him up and say, hey, have you heard of a guy named Khan? And Spock be like, yeah, I totally heard of a guy named Khan. He's totally evil. And that's exactly what happened. I took my hat off, threw it to the ground. I literally threw my hat on the ground. Like, you did it. I can't believe you did it.
Have you ever seen Honest Trailers?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the Into Darkness one, they do this thing where they show the Quinto Spock holding a checklist, and written on it is, you know, the Gorn, Gary Mitchell, you know, all these different things, and he's got check marks next to him, and then they cut to the screen, and it's old Spock, and old Spock says, and did I tell you about the Gorn? And he's like, yeah, I got that.
Go over here and do this, because, you know, they could really, him being like, the Doomsday Machine's going to come no matter what, and the fact that he's not like, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but you may want to stop this before it destroys an entire solar system.
Right.
Yeah, no, see, I have no problem with this, really, because of the way it was handled. I can see, you know, what you're saying, but, like, it was kind of a Star Trek VI Spock moment where he's like, look, I made this vow. I'm not going to tell you anything. I told you, you can't do that. You can't have a checklist and just ask me every time, because that's cheating and that's just wrong, and your life will not be fulfilling if you do that. But in this case, okay, because, you know, this is the dude who killed me, I'm going to make an exception. I'm going to use, you know, logic here, you know, unlike me with my Batman rules for watching, you know, various versions of movies. Spock, he's more evolved than that. And he can say, like, I know I made this rule, but I'm going to break it this one time because it's really freaking important. And I know some people have big problems with that. I have no problem with that. In fact, I like that moment a lot. That's one of my favorite moments in the movie, when he's like, that being said, I'm like, yeah, you go, Spock, you know?
See, I didn't like it because it could be easily removed. Like, and it's obvious that they wrote it. They wrote it just in case the Nimoy couldn't do it, but it doesn't change the plot any. That knowledge doesn't change anything that Spock was already going to do. He already didn't trust Khan, and him, yeah.
What did he? How did it change anything? That's the one thing I don't know understand.
We don't know what he told him, though.
Yeah, after the screen cut away.
No, right. You never know what Spock told him, but the ultimate thing was, I'm going to have to beam down and beat this guy. Beat this guy in a moving car, and I'm sure that's not what Spock told him.
Spock's the way that Spock defeated Khan originally was one sacrifice, self-sacrifice, but he also was like, Khan doesn't think third dimensionally, which doesn't really enter into any of how he's defeated.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think I honestly, like, when he says, like, how would you beat him, or how is he dangerous or whatever, I don't think that he told him anything. I think he just told him, like, you got to watch out for this guy, and you've got to be thinking on your toes, you know, or whatever. Does that even make sense? I don't know. but, you know, you've got to, you know, really step up your game here. And I think that, I mean, yeah, you could take it out and it would still be fine, but I love the fact that it's in there. And for me, I think that it's like sort of a turning point for new Spock, where he's like, okay, you know, this just got real, and now I'm going to have to be super cunning. And what he does, it's not him now just beaming down to beat up people. It's him, you know, thinking about the whole thing with the torpedoes and all that stuff. Whatever. I'm never going to win this argument ever with anyone I ever have it with, but that's just my personal feeling, you know. Don't stop listening to the show because of it. Well, Dave, any final thoughts on Spock?
As I said, I think that he is one of the greatest characters ever created. I think Nimoy's portrayal of him gives us a very powerful yet subtle, you know, journey that this character is on, and the word fascinating keeps jumping into my head, and I'm trying not to say it, but I think Nimoy's portrayal of that character, and I'm going to stick to the original series right now, because I think that's the real strength of his performances. Is I think it's just amazing. Just a I think it's if you are not a Star Trek fan, you're not listening to this podcast. But if you are not a Star Trek fan and you are listening to this podcast, go watch Journey to Babel. Go watch Amok Time. Go watch, I mean, seek these episodes out because they're really, really enjoyable to watch. His performances are just incredible.
Drew, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I love Spock. And, yeah, Nimoy's portrayal of him is... He seems to be one of the few people who has a grasp of a particular character right from the very beginning. And he took it seriously, and that says a lot about, like, you know, when you're given these scripts, I imagine sometimes they were like, really? But Nimoy always found a way to play it straight and to play it cool. And, yeah, Spock is great.
Yeah. I mean, Spock has never been my favorite character, and, you know, whenever there is, like, with the exception of probably Amok Time, anytime that there's sort of, like, a Spock-centric episode, I kind of think, like, I don't know. And not that it's ever bad or anything like that, but just that, you know, there's so much, like, mythology there that I know that there's going to be a lot of, you know, exposition and stuff like that. But, you know, when I think about the character from a more distance perspective, I'm like... He is kind of like the guy that I try to base my decisions on in life. Like, there have been so many times where, you know, I've been at a crossroads and I'd be like, you know, what would Spock do here? You know, he's the logical one. You know, I should really do whatever it is he would do. I mean, I can't. I've got a line of Spock dialogue engraved in my wedding ring, okay? So, yeah, it's not like I'm not a fan of the character.
What do you have? What is it?
It says, I have been and always shall be your friend.
Very nice.
Oh, yes, it is. But, yeah, I mean, he is one of the best characters in television history. It's just weird because he's not the best one on that show, you know? It's a great show.
It's interesting how his fan following, the fan following for Spock, is, you know, there are a lot of women who love Spock. My wife is one of them.
Yeah, my wife too.
My wife says, you know, I'm his girlfriend. He just hasn't come out and said it, you know. I mean, there's an interesting people, and it crosses lines because he's also a cool male character for guys to follow, you know, where I'm more of a Kirk guy, and Kirk, I think his following is mostly men. I mean, he's a testosterone driven decision maker cowboy, you know? But Spock is interesting because it's that smoldering emotion underneath that captures the lady's fancy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true.
So Dave, where can people find you on the internets?
I am a Twitter person, and you can find me at It Means Hope. But it's really Lieutenant Means Hope, because the I in it is actually a small L.
The L stands for logic, right?
Right.
Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking Spock with us. It was great. Maybe we'll have you back on sometime for something else.
I'd love to, guys. The original series is really, I love it. I talk about it any chance I get. So anytime you'd have me back, I'd love to be here.
Well, it was fun talking about Spock with Dave Rossi today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Gene Roddenberry.
I appreciate Gene Roddenberry as a creator because he had a vision and he stuck to it, unlike other creators of other franchises that we won't get into.
Who are you talking about, Drew?
Not George Lucas.
Earl Grey.
Romance on TNG.
I got the four pips. I'm ready to settle down now. It wasn't until then that I could get stay with one woman.
So instead of rings, do they use that last pip on his collar as the signal of their eternal love and devotion together?
The orb.
Bajoran prophecies.
Well, you know, I was thinking that Horan was probably not so much a prophet as a Bajoran songwriter who just wrote really bad lyrics.
The Ready Room.
Faces.
What you brought up is the exact reason why I like this episode so much, because the essential message is we have to have our good and our not so hot qualities to make us who we are. We have to deal with them. And this is just a very extreme version of that.
To the journey!
Workforce Rewrite.
And I'm totally with you about Jaffin. He is like Mark version 2.0. He's just like, he's a little too laid back. He's a little too quick to buy into all of this. Mm-hmm. And I just, yeah, dude, grow a pair. I like the way you put that.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Black and Cushman, part two.
So they were trying to find a replacement, not to play Spock, but to play another Vulcan who would be assigned to the Enterprise.
Whoa.
And one of the one of the guys they were considering was David Carradine, who went on
what?
To
play. Oh, my God.
Warp 5.
Continuity and consequences.
It was a place that you generally don't expect Star Trek to go with a major character for sure, and certainly not for the period of time that it went on, because, you know, it starts in Fusion. She becomes infected with this Panar syndrome, and then that even leads her to drug addiction.
Trek News and Views.
Looking back at TNB.
Oh, okay, we're still talking TMP. I was thinking Janeway's Pink Nighty.
Oh, no, it's like, what?
Oh, Janeway's Pink Nighty, OBQ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
before.
Seem to like it.
Yeah, done before, yeah. Yeah. That was a nice nighty.
Literary Treks.
Bill Wynn.
It has two sides to it. You know, you can read it as just the fun yacht race, which I thought, the Federation has a biannual sailing competition? I did not know this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. So let's tell everyone where they can contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts in today's show. Just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both me and Mike by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone, and you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm and on Twitter under username trek.fm. So, Mike, where can people find you outside of orbit here?
Well, you can find me still on trek.fm doing commentary Trek Stars with Max. And you can also find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, doing commentary Track Stars Off Topic with Max and our friend Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at ComTrackStars.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE, and in various other shows around the network. Well, we got a message from someone using the Contact Us interface tool. And it's from Daniel Hadlin from California. And he says, "Hey guys, I love this show. I've been waiting so long for a TOS podcast to come to Trek FM, and now that it's finally here, I'm really happy with the quality of the first episode. I really enjoy the show and look forward to hearing much more of it." Well, thanks for contacting us, Daniel. We appreciate all the feedback.
Yeah, and hopefully episodes 2 through 6 have lived up to expectations. If not, sorry.
Yes. We could use some more feedback, so please leave us reviews, message us any way that you want to contact us. Please do so, and maybe we'll read it on the air.
So, Drew, have you ever read I Am Spock?
I actually have not read I Am Spock.
I haven't read it either, but you know, 1 year for Christmas, my wife, who we talked about on this episode as being a huge Spock fan and Leonard Nimoy fan, she was like, "The only thing I want for Christmas is I Am Spock." And I'm like, okay, that's going to be difficult to track down. Had I known that it was on audible.com, I would have just sent her there or gotten the thing done, downloaded it, put it on her iPad or iPod or whatever. And then, you know, Christmas morning, she would have just, you know, turned on the iPad and it's like, boom, I Am Spock. And if I would have signed up using the offer code from Trek FM, it wouldn't have cost me anything. It would have been like a free Christmas present.
Which is the best kind.
Audible is the sponsor of Standard Orbit, and it's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles are coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read, like I Am Spock, or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM.
Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure once again. Thanks for being the co-pilot of this fabulous Standard Orbit show.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me once again. I appreciate it.
And thank all of you for listening every week. So have a good rest of the week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Aye, sir.